galaxy through the detection, the indirect detection of dark matter annihilation inside these subhalos. In particular, I will focus on gamma rays, mostly because the gamma ray experiment BLAST is about to be launched this week. So the framework I'm working on is the one which is defined by Green et al. Theoretical inputs. In the CDM framework, we expect that smaller structures form first, and then they merge into larger mass halos. And the smallest mass can be computed for each given dark matter candidate. In particular, Green et al. Did this computation and calculated the power spectrum for a 100 GeV Beano and showed that the minimal mass for subhalos is 10 to the minus 6 solar masses. This input was used by Diemann et al. In 2005 to find, actually, in numerical simulations, these very small mass halos. And the status of the art of how do we expect our galaxy to be formed and to be composed in terms of subhalos is that we expect about 10 to the 15 halos, which mass going from 10 to the minus 6 to 10 to the 10. Of course, this 10 to the minus 6 is just one value, but there is a very huge spread of values that goes from 10 to the minus 14 solar masses to 10 to the minus 4 or something like that. And the special distribution of the subhalos is expected to trace the Milky Way apart from tidal effect in the center. OK, so we end up with a halo filled with a huge number of subhalos. Well, this is the Via Láctea simulations. This does not include these very small mass halos. But you can imagine our galaxy is formed by 10 to the 15 or so halos. So if we have WIMP dark matter candidates, then we will end up with a huge amount of annihilation products. And this is very important because today there are experiments that are going to look to these signals. In particular, Pamela has taken that on the antiprotons and antimatter signals, and GLAST is about to launch, to be launched. Okay. If we want to compute the number of photons that we expect from dark matter annihilation inside the subhalos, this can be factorized into almost independent terms. One belonging to particle physics, which is proportional to the annihilation cross-section and to the energy distribution of the cascade of photons. And the other one, which depends on cosmology and astrophysics. Now I will focus on this one. When we want to compute this factor for one single halo, that can be the Milky Way halo or one single subhalo inside the Milky Way, then this is actually the integral along the line of sight of the square of the density. But this factor depends on the dark matter density profile and on the concentration parameters that tells us how much concentrated is the halo, so how much dark matter is inside the very inner radius, radii of the halo itself. Both these two parameters are not really well known, so we will have to make some assumptions. And when we want to understand how this cosmology, let's call it cosmological factor, is made, when we want to sum up over all the 10 to the 15 subhalos, we end up with a more complicated relation where essentially we have to convolve the factor for each halo with the distribution, the probability distribution of these subhalos inside our galaxy, both in mass and in shape, let's say. And this also should be convolved with the probability function for this concentration parameter, because for any given model, which we don't know which is true, but anyway, for any given model, the relationship that relates the concentration parameter to the mass gives only the average of the value. And we have to consider a distribution of these concentration parameters for each given mass. So which is the contribution to the flux, to the gamma ray flux of all these halos? Here, this is essentially a flux map. This is not a sensitivity map. This is not what we are going to see. By the way, this is how the Milky Way would appear if no subhalos would have put inside. It's a cone view of 50 degrees along the line of sight towards the center of the galaxy. So of course, this is the effect of the Caspi profile that we give as input in our model. Then here are shown both the closest and the more shining subhalos as they would appear. But if we sum up over all the 10 to the 15 halos, that means in one single line of sight, which is 10 to the minus 5 steradians, we have something like 10 to the 9 subhalos. So in each direction we look for, we would see something like 10 to the 9 subhalos. So the signal, the overall signal that we expect would be much, much higher. Of course, okay, I'm changing here. I will change this model. What does it mean? As I said before, it's not so easy. It's not univocal, the determination of the concentration parameter relationship with the mass. So if we change this one, and if we change the mass function of subhalos, for instance, from m to the minus 2 to m to the minus 1.9, these results will change dramatically. Now just look, I remind you, this is a flux map. Look what happens if I change model. So if I just use as input another concentration parameter and another mass function slope. This is a model where the halos will be less shining than to the other model. And here you can see that you can start isolating, seeing some halos. And even more here, if I use a model where the flux from each subhalo is smaller than in other models, then I could actually resolve more subhalos. But this is a flux map, this is not a sensitivity map. So this does not mean, in fact, that we can observe all these halos. Something very interesting when looking at the overall contribution of all these subhalos is that we can use constraints given from the EGRET experiment. What does it mean? Here I plot the number of photons that we expect along L equals 0 for energies greater than 3 GeV in 1 year. For these different models that maybe you cannot see very well here, as a function of the angular view from the galactic center. The bold line here, the black bold line, is the EGRET measurement. Now, we see that some models, the prediction for some models actually exceed the number of photons which were observed. So this cannot happen. This line cannot be above the EGRET line. Of course, all the lines are above the EGRET line at the galactic center, but since the EGRET resolution was very bad compared to all the point sources that are close to the galactic center, we are not very much concerned about the effect here. But we will normalize the effect of the existence of all these subhalos to what is expected from the EGRET extragalactic gamma ray backgrounds. This means simply that if we now look at the particle physics parameters phase, we have some excluded region, because if we have to lower this line, this means that we cannot use annihilation cross-section, for instance, greater than these values here. So this this is a framework that must be used when we want to compute the sensitivity of, for instance, the GLAST experiment to these sources. This is the sensitivity defined as the number of photons from the signal divided by the square root of the number of the background photons. And we can see that as far as all the integrated contribution of all the 10 to the 15 subhalos is concerned, this does not give a very high contribution here. Of course, here we would have a detection at several sigmas, but This does not depend on the subhalo contribution, but it's due only to the Milky Way signal. If we want to see, if we want to resolve the halo, so if we can translate the flux map into a sensitivity map for the single subhalos, then we end up with different predictions for the different models. Now, don't worry too much about the meaning of all this model. I'm not going to the details of how these models differ from each other. But this is the number of halos as a function of the halo mass. And you cannot see, but here is 10 to the minus 6 solar masses, and here is 10 to the 10 solar masses. And we can see that actually, once we normalize the particle physics sector to the Egret limit, only a very few models give an observable number of subhalos. Anyway, this observable number of subhalos can be pretty high in some models. Here it's reported the total number of subhalos that would be seen by GLAST as a function of the different slope for the mass function. And there are models where the number of observable halos would be as high as more than 100 for any given mass function slope. In other models, they will always be zero. So there will be no way, no way at all to observe such subhalos. There are other cases where this number can change from zero to something about. And this is the number of subhalos that could be seen if we assume the best particle physics parameters, which are compatible with Egret. Yeah, sure. In fact, that would be almost zero if we assume, for instance, a 100 GeV neutralino with 10 to the minus 26 centimeter cube times seconds for the value of an annihilation cross section. So the message is that the number of detectable halos of the whole sky is actually very unconstrained and can go from zero to 130. But the important message is that all of these subhalos have masses greater than 10 to the 5 solar masses. So all those 10 to the 15 very small mass subhalos are actually not visible at all in any model. To see if this result is robust, well, we can take into account some parameters that may change something. For instance, the concentration of each subhalo may depend on the initial conditions where the halo formed, or subhalos may contain sub-subhalos. I'm not going to talk about this topic now. I will talk tomorrow in the small-scale workshop. But what do we mean that the concentration parameter changes as a function of the distance in the galaxy and of the formation epoch? Actually, in another work by Dimon and collaboration, they found, they managed to find the distribution of the material that went at redshift zero, of the material that merged at higher redshifts. And they found that the older times this dark matter material entered the larger halo, the closer it's to the center and the more concentrated it is. So we have another shape for this subhalo distribution function that does not follow the Navarro-Francovoisot, does not trace the mass of the galaxy as it is, but depends on when these halos formed. And now we have to change the concentration parameter accordingly. How can we do that? Well, we have to find out this nu value, which is very important because the term higher nu halos are supposed to be more concentrated and closer to the galactic center. And we determine this nu value by using the conditional mass function for dark matter halos. That is, we analytically derive the fraction of mass in subhalos of mass m, which at redshift z enter the today Milky Way halo. And then we can derive for every redshift the number of this object. So what do I mean? If this is the merging history of our halo, which is this one, for each redshift, we can have the number of halos with a given mass. And then, of course, we have to normalize to the results of the numerical simulations. Once normalizing to the numerical simulations, we can analytically determine the mass function as a function both of the mass and of this factor of nu. No, I'm sorry, this is nu square, of course, because nu is defined as the ratio of the spherical collapse over density over the variance of mass, which is the square of this S. So now, when we assign to each subhalo of a given mass m a concentration parameter, we don't have anymore only the probability, the log normal probability we were using before, but we have to add the information of when these subhalos enter the main halo. So if it enters at more ancient times, it is more concentrated because it will have a higher nu, and its concentration parameter today will be nu times the concentration parameter that would have had if entered at sigma equal zero. So all this work to end up with not a dramatic change, actually. So this is, again, the number of photons above 3 GeV in 1 year as a function of the angle of view from the center of the galaxy. And if the black line represents what I've shown you before, so with the concentration parameter univocally determined by the mass, this is the result in red. This is the result you have if we use this more sophisticated way of assigning the concentration parameter. This is not a dramatic change, which is good for our predictions because it means that they will not change so much. And we can see that both as far as the sum of all the small halos is concerned, and in fact, the highest effect we expect is a 2 sigma effect, which is not too much. And then if we compute the number of halos, if we compute the number of halos which have a nu high enough to be detectable, this is not significant. So actually the probability that a high nu halo is as close to us as to be detected is very small. For our purpose, we can say it's zero. So we can say yes, okay, as far as this point is concerned, the result I presented is pretty safe. Yes, subhalos may contain subhalos, and I will talk about that in more details tomorrow. So these are my conclusions. The main conclusion is that the prediction about how many halos can be detected with GLAST is not so, it's robust in a sense that if we add more sophisticated way of thinking about the concentration parameter, it stays as it is. But still, it's not very predictive, actually, because it goes to a number of halos detectable from 0 to 130. But what is most important is that they're all high mass subhalos. Thank you. The error, you mean?
I'm asking how much difference if you look at the
Sorry, I don't. I can't hear the.
I'm wondering with this prediction for the number of subhalos that are detectable, how much will that vary just from sort of cosmic variance in the merging history of the Milky Way's halo? I mean, there'll be different numbers of massive halos.
You know, high mass halos, you mean? I mean, if I change the mass function of halos?
No. Just randomly, if you sort of did several simulations of the Milky Way halo.
But this is what we did. I mean, we randomly simulated the sky.
And that's
what and this result, this error here is the standard deviation average over 10 Monte Carlo simulation of the sky. So yes, it's more or less 20-30% of error. I'm still working on it, but it can make a huge difference when we look, for instance, at the dwarfs. So I will show tomorrow that while if we do not include sub-subhalos, we cannot actually see the dwarf with glass. If we include sub-subhalos, then it may be possible. Of course, always given the most optimistic values for the particle physics.